All right. Let's get going. 3, 2, 1. All right. Happy Thursday. Man, it's been a day. It has been a day. I think I rolled through like 6 interviews today, 2 videos. It's been a day, but a good day, an energizing day, just exhausting. You know, every day I find is kind of equal parts energizing and exhausting. So I want to take on 3 stories and I want to try to move them through them quickly and efficiently because, you know, quickly and efficiently is my middle name. No, you all know better. It's my middle name is like meandering and directionless, right? You've got my number. But these are 3 good news stories. In most respects. So let's start with Donald Trump losing in court spectacularly in the Voice of America case. And you remember Carrie Lake, right? The election denier from Arizona who has done nothing but support Donald Trump's lies and lose elections. That's what she's good at. Those would be the first 2 entries on Carrie Lake's resume. Support Donald Trump's election lies and lose Arizona elections. She's a piece of work. But there has been litigation that's been ongoing for a long time in front of one of my favorite judges, Judge Royce Lamberth. He is a lion of DC criminal justice circles, actually a lion of the bench nationally. He has held cabinet secretaries in contempt. He's held the entire EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, in contempt when the agency was violating his orders many, many years ago. He was appointed to the bench by Ronald Reagan, and he is somebody that I admire greatly. In fact, I tried a RICO case in front of him, a case over which he presided for 6 months. So we spent a lot of quality time together. I think the world of Judge Lamberth. Well, he just ruled that, you know, Carrie Lake was basically tapped to head up the Voice of America. Just real quick, folks, in the event you're not super familiar with VOA does, my gosh, it's part of our soft power that the United States used to exercise to do good around the world, like USAID. So much for that, right? It's coming back. It will come back. We're going to bring it back. But what Voice of America did is it broadcast to in 100 languages to 61 countries around the world. Primarily, Voice of America, was always targeting, you know, governments that were dictatorships and autocracies and, you know, tyrannical, totalitarian regimes where people were abused and oppressed and put upon and denied not just their civil rights, but their basic rights and their human rights. And so we would broadcast into all of those countries truthful, accurate information about what was going on around the world, what was going on in America. And we would promote democracy and civil rights and human rights and good government, government that is representative of the people. We would broadcast this truthful information to combat the propaganda and disinformation that their own governments were force-feeding them. That's a really important global mission, promoting democracy around the world. Now, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying, Glenn. You know, we need to be broadcasting that kind of information into the United States. We need a channel that we can turn to. This is the way we used to turn a channel a long time ago, right? When we had the old TVs or the radio knobs. Everything is pushing a button now, or maybe just talking into a magic box and telling Alexa or Siri or some other non-existent person what to play for us. I miss the old days, and kids, get off my dang lawn. Man. It's what happens when you turn 65. We need to have that information broadcast into the United States. You know, we used to be respected as champions of democracy and decency and civil rights and human rights and government you know, of the people, by the people, and for the people, representative government, but no more, not right now. We will get it back. But Voice of America had such an important, you see how I promised that I couldn't do this quickly and efficiently? This is the first story, and I'm not even like a tenth of the way through it. I'm exhausted. I get tired of me by the end of the day. Enough with the me. I'm sick of me. But you all got to listen to me for another few minutes. You don't have to, I guess. You could go, you know, watch my friend Wajahat Ali, or, you know, Pete Dominic, or Dean Obidala, or Ellie Leonard, the panicked writer who is unpacking all of the Epstein files. Man, Ellie's great. I am really like, my mental train is just like jumping the track left and right tonight. I promise I'm going to get through this story. Promise I'm going to get through this story. So Carrie Lake was put in charge of Voice of America to basically kill it, right? Walk it deep into the woods and shoot it dead so that we were no longer promoting messages of democracy around the world. Why? Just because Donald Trump likes to break things and destroy things and hurt people. He's a sadist. That's what sadists enjoy, hurting people. And she has been playing games in this court case for the better part of a year, and Judge Lamberth just ruled against her. And here's what he said. You will return to work the 1,000 employees that you sent away. They will be returned to work by March, I think, 23rd, and you will begin rebroadcasting the message of Voice of America, democracy, civil rights, human rights. You will resume broadcasting that around the world pronto, Carrie. He didn't say pronto or Carrie. That was me. And here is what he said in a nice little flourish in his ruling. He said that she oversaw the dismantling of the agency. And here's the thing, friends. The law, the federal law, provides that VOA, Voice of America, must engage in this mission, must broadcast this message to countries around the world. Non-negotiable. It's the damn law, Carrie. And he said that defendants, Carrie Lake's persistent omission and withholding of key information in this case, in this litigation, has been a Hallmark production in bad faith. Hallmark capitalized. We all know what a Hallmark production is, right? It's those, you know, sentimental TV movies, right? Made for TV. Hallmark, I don't want to call them sappy, but, you know, I think they would have had to climb three rungs to make it up to sappy. He said, your obstinate, misleading, dilatory conduct in this case, in this litigation, has been a Hallmark production in bad faith. In other words, a bad movie that is replete with bad faith on your part. And I don't think she's out of the contempt woods yet, but this is good for the rule of law, because he said you were violating the law every step of the way, and you're going to stop it now. You're going to bring those 1,000 employees back. You're going to begin rebroadcasting the information that by law you're required to broadcast. And this is a win for the rule of law. It's a win for the American people. And this is not hyperbole. It's a win for global security, because we're going to help get that message out to the nations, the people of the nations that need it most. Dictatorships, autocracies, you know, totalitarian regimes, tyrants. That's where we need to keep getting that information to. Because, you know, we kind of should be promoting democracy and fighting against tyranny, you know, all over the globe. Not sending troops to fight against tyranny, but sending pro-democracy, truthful, accurate information and reporting to fight tyranny. So this ruling is good news, because it's a win for the people. It's a win for the rule of law, and it's a big, fat, effing loss for the orange blowfish. And Carrie Lake, again, looks like the loser that she is. Good news story number one. Good news story number two is Christy Noem. We're going to save Pam Bondi for last because we just had a development literally in recent hours that we're going to add into our discussion of Pam Bondi. Christy Noem. I love this story. Christy Noem has been referred to the Department of Justice for a criminal investigation into perjury. Right? Gives me the feels. Christy Noem has been referred to the Department of Justice by the leadership of both the Senate Judiciary Committee and the House Judiciary Committee, Senator Dick Durbin, Representative Jamie Raskin, for as many as four instances of lying to Congress, which constitutes, in layman's terms, perjury, lying under oath. In legal terms, it's a false official statement to Congress in violation of 18 United States Code, Section 1001. For those of you scoring at home, there will be a test later. And they lay out in their referral how she committed the crime of lying to Congress, false statements to Congress. And I got to tell you, one of the charges in particular is it would be if I got to prosecute her for it, it would be like shooting fish in a perjury barrel or shooting perjury fish in a barrel. It would be easy to win. It's kind of what I'm trying to say. And here's why. When Christy Noem was asked by Senator Blumenthal whether Corey Lewandowski had a role in approving contracts at DHS, Christy Noem answered, no. Unequivocal, no. Corey Lewandowski had no role. And then, I mean, gosh, just read the ProPublica reporting from a few days later, where they reviewed documents and contracts, including a contract for $100,000 to purchase equipment for DHS. Who signed off on it? Corey Lewandowski. But wait, there's more. There is also a checkoff sheet when new contracts are being entered into by DHS, and it had a number of government DHS officials on it. Guess who was the last person who had to check off on it, approving the contract right before it went to Christy Noem? Corey Lewandowski. But wait, there's more. Four DHS officials, former officials and current officials, said Corey Lewandowski was involved in approving DHS contracts. No prosecutor, a novice prosecutor, couldn't lose that case in court. No case is a sure winner. I get that. But the evidence is overflippin'-whelming that she committed the crime for which she has just been referred to Congress. And that's only one of the four crimes that are set out in this referral. So in the before times, right, when the rule of law was still operative at the Department of Justice, she would be indicted, tried, convicted, punished. It's a 5-year crime, by the way, lying to Congress, in a DC minute. Easy on the evidence. But where is that criminal referral going to? Pam Bondi. Pam Bondi's Department of Justice, Donald Trump's Department of Justice, where Pam Bondi serves as his consigliere to Trump's mob boss. So, do we expect Pam Bondi will allow a full, fair, apolitical investigation of the suspected and alleged crimes of Christy Noem? What do you think? No, the answer is probably no, unless Donald Trump gives her dispensation or permission or direction. Donald Trump he's already thrown Christy Noem under the bus. Why? Because she said, of course, Donald Trump knew about and approved my $220 million vanity commercial where I'm riding around on a horse with my blown out hair and my cowboy hat and, you know. And so Donald Trump fired her because nobody puts responsibility on Donald Trump. Nobody puts his responsibility baby in the corner. That one didn't really work. I thought I'd go for it, though. Nobody puts baby in a corner. Okay. So maybe Donald Trump will say, hey, Pam, yeah, you know, I call the shots of the Department of Justice. And in case you forgot, there's my big limp picture hanging off the building that you have to look at every day when you come and go. My Department of Justice. I want you to prosecute Kristi Noem because she made me look bad. I mean, that's a pot with Donald Trump. Anything is a possibility. This is a guy who says he might just drop some more bombs for fun. And this is a guy who says I would be honored to take Cuba. And I can take Cuba because I can do whatever I want. These are quotes. So maybe he tells Pam to prosecute Kristi. But probably not, right? Probably Pam Bondi lets that criminal referral die on the vine. She buries it. She refuses to investigate it or pursue it. But here's the thing, friends. This is the good part. These perjury charges will survive the statute of limitations, and she can and will be prosecuted, if I have anything to say about it, in 2029, Kristi Noem for the perjury. But it gets better. Because if Pam Bondi takes a criminal referral for which there is ample evidence of a felony crime committed against Congress, and she buries it, she hides it, she covers it up, she refuses to investigate it, and she thereby helps Kristi Noem do what? Here are the magic words. Evade detection, arrest, trial, and punishment. Hello, accessory after the fact. Felony offense for Pam Bondi for covering it up. Maybe it's also obstruction of justice. Maybe it's also a conspiracy if two or more poor people agree to cover up, to secrete, to bury this criminal investigation and thereby help Kristi Noem get away with the false statements that she made to Congress. We're going to have a buffet of criminal activity by these cretins, these Trump flunkies, lapdogs, sycophants, when the rule of law comes back into the light of day, and then we're going to get our accountability on. The American Accountability Project. So this is a story that is good because there's a criminal referral, and then it takes a little bit of a dip because we don't expect Pam Bondi to be an honest broker of the facts or the law and hold Kristi Noem accountable. But then we're going to climb back up out of the valley and we're going to see how many crimes Pam Bondi can be held accountable for, given how she decides to handle the Kristi Noem criminal referral. So another good story. That one was really more about Kristi Noem. Pam Bondi, we're going to finish up with this one. I love this story too. Well, guess what a Republican committee of Congress headed up by Republican James Comer just did? Subpoenaed Pam Bondi. And I believe a total of five Republicans crossed over on the committee and voted to subpoena Pam Bondi. That's notable. That's noteworthy right there. Five Republicans crossed over to subpoena Donald Trump's consigliere criminal defense attorney, Pam Bondi. And the reason they did is because I never in my life thought I would read something that James Comer wrote. I'm sorry, he's a knucklehead of a congressman. Here's what he wrote in this letter to Pam Bondi, dated March 17th. I think that's yesterday. Is today the 18th? He says, the Committee on Oversight and Government Reform is reviewing the possible mismanagement, his word, of the federal government, DOJ's, investigation of Epstein and Maxwell. The circumstances and subsequent investigations of Epstein's death, I like that we're opening that up, the operation of sex trafficking rings, and ways for the federal government to effectively combat them, the ways in which Epstein and Maxwell sought to curry favor and exercise influence to protect their illegal activities, and potential violations of ethics rules related to elected officials. You know, it's countries around the world are investigating, executing search warrants, arresting people who were implicated in the Epstein files, but we're not doing shit at the Department of Justice. We're turning a blind eye. We're covering it all up. We're refusing to investigate when countries around the world are investigating. And James Comer said, we need to talk about your mismanagement and we need to talk about all of these issues, and we're issuing you a subpoena. We're not just requesting that you come testify. We're issuing you a subpoena. And he goes on to say, one more sentence, the committee has questions regarding the Department of Justice's handling of the investigation into Epstein and his associates and its compliance with the Epstein Files Transparency Act. As Attorney General, you are directly responsible for overseeing the department's collection, review, and determinations regarding the release of files pursuant to the Epstein Files Transparency Act. And the committee therefore believes that you possess valuable insight into these efforts. Oh, she's got some valuable insight, all right. You know, she could certainly tell us why she is violating federal law every day since December 19 by still concealing, refusing to release 3 million documents. Yeah, she's got some valuable insight. But here's the thing. And before I go to the end game of this story, let's talk about the new development that just literally just broke in the last couple of hours. So Pam Bondi apparently requested, it's a little murky how this came about, a friendly briefing session with Congress. And so she arrived. And they went behind closed doors, the committee and Pam Bondi, and she didn't really have anything to offer. She wasn't giving a briefing. But when one of the, I think it was Representative Garcia, who I think on that particular committee that was meeting with Bondi is the ranking member, the Dem ranking member, his first question was, well, do you pledge to comply with the subpoena that Representative Comer issued you to appear and talk about the mismanagement of the release of the Epstein files? That subpoena is for April 14th, a few weeks down the road. You pledge that you will comply with that subpoena. And she wouldn't say she would comply with the subpoena. The nation's top law enforcement official who has been served with a lawful congressional subpoena says, I'm not going to tell you if I'm going to comply. I'm not going to pledge to comply with that subpoena. Okay. Ooh, y'all are smashing the hearts. Is that what we call it? So here is what I think is going on. And here is the point I want to make to wrap up the Pam Bondi discussion. It almost feels like Pam Bondi wanted to come in for this little friendly little debriefing. It's not a Q&A. I don't have to be under oath. Just a friendly little briefing. Can I come on and sit down and maybe we'll have some, you know, light snacks, maybe a drink? And then she goes in there. She has no briefing to provide and she won't pledge to comply with a lawfully issued congressional subpoena for her mismanagement of the Epstein files release. I think maybe she thought she would be able to sweet talk them out of the subpoena. Like, you know what? We'll just have this casual little get together of a briefing and then I'll ask you to withdraw the subpoena. Now, let me add, friends, there are, although infrequently, there are occasions where we will withdraw subpoenas. When I say we, I'm talking about prosecutors. But Congress has withdrawn subpoenas too. There's been reporting over the years about people providing information voluntarily and Congress then withdrawing the subpoena, which it's not a practice that I don't want to say I don't endorse it, but it generally is a recipe for, if not disaster, incomplete information being provided to Congress. But it happens. Prosecutors can do it. I could subpoena somebody exercising the power of the grand jury, and that person's lawyer could approach me and say, Glenn, can we maybe negotiate a full interview? And my client pledges to answer all the questions truthfully. And if you are satisfied with the nature and the topics that we cover, maybe you would consider withdrawing the subpoena. Almost never, but not never. And it would take a lot of discussion for me to lay out the particulars about why a prosecutor might be willing to withdraw a subpoena. But it feels like maybe Bondi thought that she could have a little get together with Congress and they would withdraw the subpoena. Well, that obviously blew up in her face when the first question she was asked is, will you comply with the April 14th subpoena that you've been served? And she would not commit to complying. And think about that. The nation's top law enforcement officer, God help us, Pam Bondi, refusing to say that she would comply with a lawful subpoena. She might violate the law. She might be in contempt for defying a congressional subpoena. Okay, Pam, you want to defy a congressional subpoena? Remember how that worked out for some others? Remember Steve Bannon? Remember Peter Navarro? Right? Those two Trump flunkies, remember them? What happened when they defied congressional subpoenas? Well, they were investigated. They were indicted. They were tried. And I was in court for the trials. They were convicted. They were sentenced. And they were imprisoned, both of them, for defying congressional subpoenas. Go ahead, Pam. You want to defy, as the top law enforcement officer in the nation, you want to defy a congressional subpoena. I invite you to do so. Because you're feeling yourself now, but your time will come. Your time will come. So I think what Pam Bondi is desperately trying to avoid, and this is where we're going to finish up, is this. Remember when Pam Bondi testified before Congress previously? First of all, it was just this ugly, disrespectful shit show of her playing the fool, right? Attacking every Democrat who questioned her, not responding to the questions. She was a clown and not a particularly entertaining one, a really sour, distasteful clown. Remember, she wouldn't turn around and acknowledge the victims, the survivors of Epstein's crimes. Wouldn't acknowledge their pain and suffering, wouldn't even turn around to look at them, wouldn't meet with any of them, because remember, they all said, we asked to meet with DOJ, and DOJ refused to meet with any of them. Remember that? But Pam Bondi says she doesn't want to investigate, nothing to investigate in the Epstein files. Well, there's a dozen people who wanted to meet with you and provide you information that you could investigate. Remember what she said in response to, oh, it'll take, I forget who the questioner was. It'll probably come to me. She said, and I think I can quote her verbatim, she was being asked about what's in the Epstein files, and she said, there is no evidence that Donald Trump committed any crime, and everybody knows that. That was her testimony, her sworn testimony to Congress. There's no evidence in the Epstein files that Donald Trump committed any crime. And what did we learn when some good reporting and some aggressive members of Congress pried another million or so documents out of Pam Bondi's hands because she was concealing them? Well, among other things, we learned that there was a teenage girl between the ages of 13 and 15 who was sexually assaulted by Donald Trump. And when she tried to fend him off, not to get too graphic, but bit him, he punched her and said, get this bee out of here. She was interviewed four times by the FBI, a sure sign of credibility. Her story was included in an FBI presentation, a write-up of sorts, documenting the allegations of criminal conduct by Donald Trump. So Pam Bondi inarguably lied when she said there's no evidence. She didn't even say no credible evidence, which also would have been a lie, it seems. She said there's no evidence. in the Epstein files. This is when she was still hiding that evidence, by the way. So I think Pam Bondi is trying desperately to weasel out of complying with that subpoena for April 14th, because if she's smart and she's questioned about that, I would love to cross-examine her on it. You put her words up here. You put the indisputable evidence, direct evidence, not circumstantial evidence, came out of the mouth of the victim. That makes it direct evidence, not circumstantial. You put those things up side by side and you say, why did you lie to Congress in your prior testimony? You know what she would have to say if she was smart or if she had a effective lawyer representing her? I plead the fifth. I invoke my Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination because my truthful testimony would tend to incriminate me. How would that look for an Attorney General of the United States to plead the fifth? I think that's what she's desperately trying to avoid. Either plead the fifth or rack up 5 years per false statement. Every false statement is another 5 years in prison, max punishment. She's already got one. She didn't think she was going to get caught in the first one because she maybe thought she was going to continue to conceal the evidence of that allegation of a crime by Donald Trump so she could get away with lying about it. Well, she blew that. And now she's going to be called out on it. And she's going to have to plead the fifth or lie again or admit to it and say, you're right. I mean, she can, you know, well, I forgot that was in there. Yeah, right, Pam. I mean, I forgot is not a perjury proof answer. Just like I don't know is not a perjury proof answer. Bill Barr tried that, right? Did anybody at the White House ask you to open a criminal investigation into someone? I don't know. Wait, I have to grapple with what the word suggests to me. I don't know. Well, yes, you do know. It would be like asking me, you know, do you know what your middle name is? I don't know. Let me go get my license. No, that's a lie. I don't know is not perjury proof. And I forgot certainly isn't going to work. Am? So these people, as we would say back in the day, are going to get got. They're going to get got. Accountability's got to come for them. Got to. Non-negotiable. We blew accountability at least twice in recent history. Richard Nixon, Donald Trump. We can't blow accountability a third time. If we do, we don't get to keep our republic. It will fall. Because all we're doing is encouraging all of the bad actors to just take our government, take our democracy from us. We don't get to keep our republic if we decline to hold folk accountable this time around. But we won't. I mean, I have to believe we've learned our lesson and we're all going to be there on the accountability mission when the time comes. And the time will come. It will come. All right, friends. Thanks for bearing with me through the rambles and the little detours that I take. Tomorrow's Friday. We'll be back here tomorrow, probably 8:30-ish. Of course, I forgot to set the countdown clock today. I'm glad I got the message out so y'all could join me. I'll try to remember to set the countdown clock tomorrow, but, you know. All right. Have a great rest of your night. Have a great Friday, and I'll see you tomorrow night.